We're shifting gears now to another conversation that does play an influence, especially when it comes to workplace dynamics. And I think so befitting that a moment ago we spoke to Celiwe Ross from Old Mutual, who was very passionate about speaking about people, leading people. But as she mentioned, people can really do incredibly well and surprise you and make you proud. I beg your pardon. But people can also let you down. And that also speaks to behavior that we typically see in the workplace. Many of you might say, well, it's Valentine's Day tomorrow. We might have a fantastic weekend. But what happens should things go wrong on Monday? Going to the workplace where you might be inebriated or even hungover. What are the consequences of being under the influence of alcohol or any other substance that might alter your mental well-being and mindset? Kagiso Lebete joins us now as Senior Employee Relations Specialist, our go-to guy when it comes to all these themes, to help us unpack more about this particular topic. But perhaps before we do that, let's also introduce the voice note that does set the context around this conversation for you to have further clarity around why this does matter.
Hi, Google. Trust you are well. Can I please remain anonymous? My colleague was fired last week for coming to work with a babalawo / hangover. I wanna know if that allowed even when she didn't drink at work. Thank you.
Well, that was a voice note that we got from Anonymous that came through last night, who raised a very valid point. An experience from a colleague who went to work, was hungover, and later actually told to essentially vacate their job position. So we're going to talk about the legalities that exist right now. Kagiso Lebete, as mentioned, is a senior employee relations specialist who joins us on the show. Kagiso, always good to talk to you.
Good evening, Google. Good evening to your listeners. I hope I'm audible.
Loud and clear, loud and clear. Thank you again for making time. Sometimes we always come up with these, you know, or share these experiences that many of our listeners do have that speak to the harsh side of the realities of labor law or labor legislation. But first things first, are there current policies that exist in terms of one being inebriated, intoxicated, or even hungover in the workplace?
In my opinion, Google, it's very important that every organization has a alcohol and or substance abuse policy, or with whatever name they choose to give it. However, every employer should ideally have a policy in place that deals with how do we handle situations where staff report for duty either inebriated or under the influence of some or other intoxicating substance. And I think ultimately that is what then would, for example, if someone reports for duty, maybe there's a compulsory breathalyzer and they're found to be under the influence of some other substance, or is it a case of incapacity that requires employee wellness? If an employee says, listen, guys, I've got a drinking problem, I've got a drug problem, I've got a prescription medication problem because of the following reasons. And the employer then has to put in place some sort of measures to differentiate between the two, as well as how to then approach each specific instance and what the recourse would be.
It sounds like it can be a very complex scenario, right? Because each circumstance is bespoke and there are various scenarios that could lead to this. But what I guess many of us are keen to understand is what is it that line managers, colleagues, or even those in leadership need to observe in one's behavior? I guess ultimately, what's the line that one draws once it starts impacting your productivity at work?
That for me is the most important factor that one needs to consider when looking at the differentiation whether one has reported for duty under the influence of either alcohol or a narcotic, or whether or not, as the voice note stated, that the person was hungover. And I think it becomes very subjective, because at what point do you say that an individual is hungover? And the reason I say that is in instances where an employer does not ordinarily breathalyze staff when they come into the workplace, the Code of Good Practice in the Labor Relations Act has what it calls a guide or a checklist, where they would look at the behavior of the individual. Do they have bloodshot eyes? Is there alcohol on the breath? How are they walking? How is their speech? And sometimes you come to work and someone is hungover and they feel very sick. They've got bloodshot eyes. They are unable to concentrate. And if you follow the checklist as is in the Code of Good Practice, you may indicate that there's a reasonable inference that this person has reported for duty whilst under the influence. So whether or not one is hungover in the absence of a breathalyzer or one has reported for duty and they have a hangover, that consideration is very subjective. And sometimes one needs to get a context of what happened for this with this particular employee, what test was conducted to ascertain whether or not they were inebriated or they were hungover. But there is a process to be followed, and that is typically laid out in a policy. In the absence of that policy, you can rely on the Act, but it's better to have your own policy as an employer in the workplace to address such situations.
Got you. I think this is so important because it also allows us to have our rights, that there does need to be a base in terms of comparing the shift in behavior, the shift in productivity and output from the employee. What we also, I guess, need to appreciate, Kagiso, is that no two work environments are the same, and the fundamental basis that brings about an understanding to the relationship that we have with our employers as employees is our contract. And at times there might be certain terms and conditions or contract types that might not fully include much of this data and information. But what do we need to be mindful of, especially as employees, regarding any references to our contract that might allude to these concerns?
So I think it's a very important point that you're making with regards to the fact that no two workplaces are the same, no two positions are the same, and also the reference to the contract, in that the contract or the policy may indicate that we have a zero tolerance approach to drugs, alcohol, intoxicating substances in the workplace. However, that does not mean that by virtue of me reporting for duty or under the influence, I'm automatically going to get fired. There has to be a process leading up to a determination as to what sanction is going to be imposed. Also, we need to look at what is the work that I do. I mean, if I sit in a stockroom in the back of the office and I don't really engage with people, the only thing I'm doing is picking stock. If someone wants five nuts, five bolts and a spanner, and I then hand that to them, the propensity for harm occurring to the employer is quite minimal. If I'm working in a very industrialized environment, I'm driving a forklift, I'm operating an overhead crane, I'm doing rigging for some suspended load that has to be transported from one point to the other, the propensity for harm occurring either to myself, to fellow colleagues, or to stakeholders to the business then becomes increasingly that much higher. Now, that person may get away with a more severe sanction in comparison to someone that is not really client-facing. I'm not really exposing myself to that much risk. I could be sitting in my little corner, and by the time I need to go home, I've engaged maybe with two or three people. So one needs to have context of what environment do I work in? What is the propensity for harm occurring either to myself, colleagues, to customers, or to equipment and or machinery? And that then, the more that propensity for harm increases, that then makes the misconduct that much more severe. And now there isn't a blanket approach. Each case is dealt with on its own merits. And that's how then typically we would get to a point where we decide what is the recommended sanction in each particular instance.
Got you. Chish, and it seems as though, you know, there needs to be very clear guidelines that do need to be followed by all parties in particular. And of course, key considerations to the uniqueness of one's job as well as outcomes. But I'm keen, Kagiso, to get your thoughts and perhaps feedback and guidelines as to what we need to do, because typically, I'm sure you get called in when it's too late, when someone has been let go of, when someone has received a final written warning or just been told that they need to leave their job. Are there ways of making sure that there's corrective action, a sense of recourse, or key guidelines that one needs to keep to should they find themselves in trouble in the workplace on the back of these concerns?
For me, first things first, and I've said this to a lot of people in my circle, people that I meet, and I say, guys, first and foremost, it's very irresponsible to go to work whilst under the influence or not in a condition fit for duty.
Okay.
If you are in that state, don't go to work. I'd rather I can't come to work today conversation
really?
Over and above me going to work. Hi, Google.
Sorry, I got you loud and clear. But I hear you, Kagiso. Many people might say, well, ooh, now I have to get another doctor's note, or my manager's going to side-eye me, and my colleagues will be making all sorts of accusations. So you're saying rather that than actually going to work when you're not.
Definitely. Rather the side-eye, rather the snide comment from the line manager saying, yeah, when I am, it was a month and weekend, I know that you are not ill. That you cannot prove. Mm-hmm. I would rather deal with that than have to deal with the fact that I reported for duty whilst under the influence of alcohol, and I'm at a position where I may lose my job. One, it's very responsible. Two, you're putting your livelihood at stake. I mean, what are the chances of you in this economy finding alternative employment? But in the event that you do find yourself in that unfortunate position, as an employee, first things first would be, in what state am I in? Am I in a position to respond to these allegations at this point in time? Or am I just going to say, kind of, what do they say in the movies? I plead the fifth. I'm not going to make a statement. Mm-hmm. I will subject myself to whatever the company expects me to subject myself to in terms of breathalyzers and testing. And I really am in a position where I can be at work, because that's the stance you're going to be taking. Why did you come to work in the first place? But my first thing is, do not go to work if you are not in the state to be at work. It just causes too much problems that you may not be able to deal with. You could end up losing your job. You could end up with a final written warning, which could further jeopardize your opportunities at growth, incentives, and the likes. So I say, first things first, don't go to work if you're not in a state to go to work. Rather stay home and deal with the absence of that day in question.
Got you. Kagiso, we'll have to leave it there for today, but really appreciate your time. You always help us in terms of guidelines and feedback we need to be mindful of. So as you've said, as Anonymous has mentioned, follow through with the guidelines that might be in place, and of course, making sure that it is unique to the work environment that they happen to operate in, and of course, their job title. But the big warning, if Valentine's Day is going to be a big weekend for you and Monday morning comes about and you don't feel quite... not up to it, but you're not in a great state to actually be productive, then maybe you should reconsider it. Kagiso, always a pleasure, sir, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for having me, Kugu. Have a good evening.
Thank you. That's Kagiso Lebete, who's a senior employee relations specialist, joining us on the show today.